Welcome to Decades From Home, a podcast about Germany. I'm Nick Houghton of 40%German.com, and I'm joined by our man in the Nürnbergerland, Simon Maddox, and coming straight out of Bonn, stalwart producer Simon Josie, to discuss the weird and wonderful side of living in Germany. Hey, producer Simon. Hey, Simon.
G'day. Good evening.
Hello, Shin.
So last week we reported on what was supposedly the most expensive property on sale in Germany, a luxurious villa formerly owned by a Russian oligarch on the banks of the Tegernsee, which is apparently going for about 25 million euros, which is some nice pocket change for the oligarchs. It was a story full of murky financial deals and tax havens, and frankly, the only decent thing that came out of it was the fact that we learned a whole new word, Da Bonza, which means rich or influential people. And it was the nickname for the Tegernsee, Lago di Bonza, much to Simon's joy. Well, it looks like Simon's going to get some more use from his new favourite word. As it turns out, there's a new most expensive property on the market in Berlin. The property on the Wannsee is said to cost 78.7 million euros, which is significantly more than 25 million euros, I think we can all agree. The luxury villa is part of a setting with a private waterfront promenade, a jetty, and a boat dock. According to the advert, the villa has 1,490 square metres of living space, which is quite a lot. It's got 9 bedrooms, 8 bathrooms, and also includes a 20-metre-long pool and a heated boathouse. Do your boats need to be hot? I don't know. The villa is surrounded by a park measuring almost 10,700 square metres. Okay, lads, time to get Da Bonza-based nicknames at the ready. Do you have any good Da Bonza-related names for this house? I'm not sure. What do you think?
Da Bonza Bunker.
Ooh. Well, interesting you should say that, because the house has actually been nicknamed the Bunker by neighbours who don't like it. So that's a pretty solid one right off the bat, Simon.
There we go. I'm straight into the mind of these poor rich millionaires in Berlin. I've gone full Bonza. Yeah, it's just sickening, isn't it? Naturally, I've never been on the Christie's international real estate page, but I have now, having looked at the notes. And like, obviously, this is an obscene amount of money. It's disgusting. But there is a house, the first one that comes up, if you look at Germany, is a 4-bed, 4-bath, 3,500 square feet property. So quite a big house, but only on 0.6 of an acre, which isn't a lot of land at all. $15.5 million for a 4-bedroom house on like half an acre of land.
What's around it? Is it in like the best, most choicest piece of real estate?
It's Munich. It doesn't say much more than that, but I mean,
it must be in the center, right? It must be next to the Marienplatz or something like that.
It's got to have one hell of a warm boathouse. Not in shot here, because that is...
It's in Marcus Söder's pocket. That's where it is.
I mean, there are some here where I think, in fact, the one that we're talking about today is one of the few here that have price available upon request. Mm-hmm. So they won't even publish the price on the website. The cheapest house they've got on here in Germany is, so far from skimming, 8.18 million euros.
Well, I mean, I was going to suggest we all like pool our money and try and get one of these houses. That seems the most achievable, right?
Well, I mean, you own a house in a fancy rich part of Germany, so I think we need to sell yours to get this ball rolling.
Yeah, mate. It's in the fashionable farming district of Augsburg.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, rich Bavarian farmers.
Yeah, just riding around on tractors full of cash. Yeah, I wish. I don't know. I mean, is Wannsee better than Tegernsee? I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I'm not sure if the view's better.
I don't think the Wannsee is laced with ski runs. I think this is the phrase we picked up last time. I don't think they have that.
Yeah.
But I imagine it's got better access to like cinemas and nightclubs and fancy bars and Michelin star restaurants. Mm. So depends what kind of millionaire you are, I guess.
It does look like one of those houses on the LA Hills, you know, like really kind of very modern, triangular, stacked triangles, basically.
What, on fire?
No, it's not in this instance on fire. But maybe you'll want to cut that out.
That might be the most cynical comment we've ever had.
Oh, you know.
Jesus Christ.
But I mean, it's not just the sort of Hollywood vibe that comes from the design of the house. It was apparently, the rumor has it in the area, that Brad Pitt ordered the house to be built because he was friends with the architect. This has not been confirmed by anyone, but it is definitely the rumor among neighbors, and they really do not like this house. And there's a lot of murky deals about the building of the house. I think the head of the local council basically said, oh, it was the SPD who did this without any following the correct process for planning permission. So it's all a bit suspect.
I mean, yeah, if you want to buy maybe Brad Pitt's house and you have a spare like 80 million euros, then this is a great opportunity. I also do find that like 78.7, like if you're going for 78, you can round up or round down. The 0.7 of a million is meaningless at this point.
It's key. It's a key piece of information. It adds the extra luster to the number.
Yeah. I also think that 8 bathrooms, if it's a 9-bedroom house, 8's not enough. Someone has a bedroom and doesn't have en suite for 80 million euros.
Yeah, but if you have like kids and that, you got to like raise them right. You don't want to just spoil them. So one, the children have to have a bathroomless bedroom.
If you've bought a 78.7 million euro house, give up on the not spoiling. That's gone already, mate.
Do you think?
Mm. You send them down to the boat dock once the heating's been turned off.
Exactly. That'll teach them.
Scrub the jetty.
Under the motto, Democracy Needs You, 250,000 people gathered on Munich's Theresienwiese to protest against the far right on Saturday afternoon. The number of people sent a very large message on its own, but there was some very passionate speeches delivered that underlined why many of the people came out on the streets of Bavaria's capital. Ultimately, the condemnation of the AfD as a dangerous extreme right-wing party, the criticism of the CDU and CSU who accepted AfD votes in the Bundestag in exchange for a tightening of migration policy. The demonstration was organized by the association Munich ist Colorful, or Munich ist Bunt, which has been one of the most important players in the fight for democracy and against far-right extremism for years. That being said, since this was a German event, there was also some technical issues. And so there was a bit of an issue with the sound system, which didn't allow everybody at the crowd line to hear exactly all of the things that were being said, although they still stuck around. And there was a lot of people, there were still people arriving as people were leaving, as one of the articles mentioned. So this is surely a positive sign. What do you think, guys, of the demo and the criticism of the CSU and CDU in Bayern? Do you think it's going to be a positive thing for the elections?
I mean, this kind of number and the coverage they've been getting on social media and in the local press, regional press, has been very encouraging for sure. I mean, if the numbers are right, 250,000 people, I saw one that was 300,000. I mean, these predictions are pretty hard to nail down, but it's, to use a very British phrase, it's a fuck ton of people, and that's to be praised. I mean, this is like half a major German city, Nuremberg's 500,000 people, and if we got half of that turning up, that would be a fantastic show. And of course, Munich's not on its own. We have seen these large, well-attended protests in multiple cities all over the nation. There will be more this weekend as well coming up. Until the election day, we're going to see hundreds of thousands of people taking to the street and protesting and getting their voices out for all manner of things, but mainly against AfD and the critique of the union, CDU, or CSU, and their behavior of late. So yeah, it's really encouraging to see the sort of level of organization and people getting out and, yeah, people turning up late, etc. But people are really determined to partake in these events, whether it be grandmas against the right, which is a fantastic thing to see.
Almost gigarect, yeah.
What a wonderful thing. My mother-in-law was at one, and yeah, very proud to be from such a cool little family. So yeah, I think it's good news. More to come. The wife and I will be attending one this weekend in Nuremberg. It isn't organized by the same organization. It's Kreuzensessen statt Grenzen by Val Lieber, which is more of like a pride adjacent organization. But yeah, it will be well attended by lots of people on the left and protesting the right. So yeah, it'll be nice to be a big head in a large crowd, because I do have a massive head.
Do you think it's going to have like an impact on the election though?
The size of my head, probably.
Yeah,
not,
the size of your head. Surely people are going to be like, fucking hell, look at the size of that guy's head. I'll vote in SPD.
I mean, there are lots of cynical voices on Reddit and social media being like, oh, it's going to achieve nothing. And yeah, maybe it's not going to achieve as much as we would hope, but we can't just sit on our asses at home just expecting good things to happen. To use a phrase that Nick often uses in the years I've known him, shy Ben's getting out.
Right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we can't just sit at home being like, oh,
no, I think it's right.
Yeah, democracy will prevail and we're all reasonable because there are lots of people who aren't quite as reasonable as we might like, and they're going to vote for pretty terrifying parties. So yeah, getting out, getting voices raised, only a good thing.
But I think there's always an element of kind of cynicism about it, and I understand why, but at the same time, I think the scale of that protest, there's a lot of people. I don't even think there was that many people in the initial protests last year, you know, for the same reasons. I'm sort of mixed on what's going to happen. I've been looking at the polls for me sins because, well, basically all the turmoil in the Bundestag 2 weeks ago and all these protests against the far right. My expectation was there would be some kind of movement in the polls, at least, that could be visible maybe in the last 2 weeks, or at least that was kind of my hope. And I've been tracking them for much longer than that, really. I look at the Sonntagsfrage probably more than I really is necessary for any individual to do who isn't employed in like tracking the polls. But I do follow it quite often. And the numbers have stayed relatively static for a year. I mean, there's been some fluctuations, certainly for the FDP, but they were never massively high sort of anyway. You know, they've obviously dipped from their 11.5% they got in the election to they're sort of sitting 4%. But if you look at the Green Party, they're on. This is going by the YouGov poll. I mean, there's more recent polls actually. In fact, if you go to the Sonntagsfrage website, you can get very up to date polls for the Bundestagswahl. And you've got INSA and Forza have released them, and there's not much between them. Like 30% for CDU, 15.5% for SPD. That's a 10% fall from the election in 2021 for SPD. Greens are on 13 and they got 14.8%. So they're not really seeing a lot of like backlash, particularly given all the sort of negative press. As I said, 4% for FDP. The interesting thing I think for me is that 6% for Die Linke. I'm not sure if you think that's going to have an impact. And then obviously between 20 and 22% for AfD from various polls, 5.5% for Bundeswehrwagenknecht taking up the sort of the last stages, and then there's sort of 5 to 6% between everyone else. So I don't know what you make of that particularly, but I wasn't massively surprised that the polls haven't changed particularly, but I was a bit surprised that we didn't change in the last couple of weeks, maybe in some kind of direction.
I mean, there's a part of me that when I see these poll numbers, I want to pore over them and take them as like meaningful data, but my entire adult life, I'm struggling to think of a moment where the polls have actually called an election accurately, like whether it be UK elections, university time, Brexit, Scottish independence, like there are just the recent elections in the States, like everything, the polling data is just, it's not reliable. And obviously YouGov really support their work. I think it's fantastic to get this kind of information to help sway people. But when I'm looking at the numbers here for CDU, CSU, I don't think, oh, I'm pleased with that data. I'm just like, oh, God, it just bums me out. It doesn't fill me with any kind of optimism. But yeah, I'm a massive liberal and I don't have the right to vote. So it's kind of like, it's nice. Like me watching golf. Like, I don't know what's going on, really.
Yeah.
I can appreciate a good eagle, but I can't contribute to the table in any way, shape or form at the moment.
I mean, I asked you on Sunday when we were talking about the show about the Valomat that was released, because they released that last Thursday. There was a lot of fanfare on the radio and they were talking about it at work. It's a very popular concept and it's like the sort of tradition just before the election, the release of the Valomat, which is a question and answer tool that compares your political positions with those of all the other parties. I do like the kind of process of the Valomat because it's like the Protestant reformer Martin Luther, who had his 95 theses. You've got the Valomat. The entire thing's constructed around theses, not 95, luckily, only 38. And it's sort of a collection of questions that they've asked all the parties, and they return these kind of, this is our perspective on this question. And then they present the questions to voters, and you can either agree, disagree, neutral, or just skip for any particular thesis or political thesis that's offered. And it's quite in depth, like they're quite like a chunky paragraph of text about a kind of position or political issue that's facing voters at the end of the month. And it's sort of compiled, as I said, from all the parties that are running in the election, or like major parties at least. And I haven't done it yet. I was intending to, got a bit busy, but also I kind of know who I'm voting for anyway. I've looked at a lot of the manifestos, so I'm kind of a mind. But what did you make of the Wahlomat?
I've done it before in years past, and I think it's a really useful tool, because one of the things that is sort of really interesting about German politics compared to US and UK politics is you have this enormous spectrum of choice. Like obviously, if you vote in the UK, you basically have like three parties where you have a chance of having some real representation. The Greens in the UK, if you're in Brighton, that's a valid vote. But elsewhere, these parties just don't have any real sort of clout. And obviously in the US, it's even more extreme. It's just a two-party system with some independents in the middle. And so I think for a lot of people, it's easy to fall into the trap of, I'm just going to vote the way my parents did, and or like how my friends vote. But the Wahlomat really gives you an opportunity to learn about which parties align with your beliefs and who maybe is the right choice for your positions. So I think it's an amazing tool to learn about politics. I'm not massively surprised, but I did get Die Linke as my best match. And of the major parties, I got Grüne was my number one match of the major parties. And then after that, of the Bundestag parties, it was SPD. My last one was AfD, which I was very, very relieved. Not hugely surprised, but I was quite relieved. There was always the terror of doing this. You're going to be like, what? I'm right-wing?
Suddenly, so suddenly there's that thing of like, as you get older, you get more right-wing, and then you suddenly realize you've answered all the questions in the affirmative to the AfD.
No, I've got Linke and Grüne, so I'm happy that I haven't slipped down that down that particular rabbit hole just yet. And we'll see what happens in 20 years, I guess.
It's been a massive success, and it's been going since 2002, the Wahlomat. It's always talked about, and I think it's the most accessible tool for the a lot of people. I wouldn't say the majority. I don't want to risk saying that, but it has been used 130 million times for almost all the elections since 2002. So I mean, it gets a lot of use. And so it's a really accessible tool to kind of see what parties are actually saying, because I think that's one of the bigger issues is the actual public discussion seems quite, well, it's just focused on kind of immigration topics, isn't it? And it's what we saw in the debate. We had the first TV debate of the election on Sunday, where Chancellor Olaf Scholz faced off against his rival, the CDU leader, Friedrich Merz, which was a controversial event in itself, as you probably noticed. There's only two parties being mentioned in what Simon has already told you is going to be a quite diverse election. So there's only the SPD and CDU were represented, which obviously seemed a bit bizarre, given all the polling that we've seen. And it was quite fractious. The debate seemed to have left people rather cold regardless. The Tagesschau actually described it in one of their articles as typically German, reliable, but also hardly inspiring. Both candidates have little charisma and have not appeared surprising or refreshingly new. They have simply been in politics for far too long. And I was like, yeah, I did get that vibe, like that there was two kind of patrician blokes who kind of looked the same, one slightly taller. I mean, did you watch it? Did you watch the debates?
I mean, we had our we have our weekly meeting to prepare for our recording, and so we finished in the middle of it, and I thought I'll be a good boy and I'll tune in to the debate. After about 15 minutes, I was like, it's late. I don't want to do this anymore, and so I did tap out. I wasn't able to hang until the bitter end. Nick's been kind enough to fill me in with some of the highlights. And reading up on it, it seemed that two of the things that are sort of glaringly missing in this discussion was there any discussion about the environment apart from things like with energy, and also the housing crisis just wasn't talked about at all. There was no question about that.
Totally missed. Most of the headlines went to Scholz, although there was no clear definite winner. Those fucking looking for winners, I find these debates absolutely pointless. Like, who won the debate? And it's like, well, a lot of the time it's just you think the person who you like won. It's kind of regardless. But Scholz came out on the offensive, which was a surprise. I think everyone's used to the opponent or the opposition party leader kind of coming out on the attack. But Scholz was very feisty, and he obviously criticised Merz for his breach of promise regarding the votes in the, with the AfD. And then Merz in turn, he had a very soundbitey quote that I've heard a few times now. He accused Scholz of being out of touch with reality on migration issues and living in a fairy tale castle. Was it Märchenschloss, I think, is the term. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, right, yeah. But I think the thing that I found interesting from it, yeah, it's really bland. I didn't find it particularly inspiring. They didn't seem to talk about any of the topics that were relevant to kind of my life. Migration just seemed to be the big focus, with some other kind of security topics around it. The Tagesschau actually did a list of all the topics that, as Simon mentioned, just seemed to have been missed off the list.
I mean, they seem to know who their audience were for this, because the majority of people who are going to be watching this are people who are motivated by immigration being the sort of the divisive topic of the day. And also the other major topic was retirement.
Mm.
And yeah, it's people who are already retired or heading towards retirement who are some of the most active voters for these parties today. Mm. And yeah, they know they've got to secure their votes by promising them decent retirement conditions.
And you couldn't sit through it, the debate. I couldn't even, I read so many articles, I've watched so many clips of it, I've watched large chunks of it, not the whole thing all the way through. But even I was just like, this is boring me to tears. But the things they didn't talk about were climate change, as you said, and that's despite all the floods and droughts in 2024. Mm. Future role of artificial intelligence, which again is another massive technology topic that Germany's just missing the boat on, because we're spending time talking about other fucking things that seem to be unrelated. There was no new ideas for climate neutral restructuring of the economy, which needs to happen. No questions on education, which is becoming a massive issue given the lack of teachers. The sort of levels of the curriculum and just generally funding. And yeah, just there was lots of topics that were totally missed out.
But there was time to be asked a question about whether Gendern should be banned. It was in the quick fire section towards the end, so I guess it wasn't too much time spent on it. But the fact that the topics you just mentioned weren't done in the quick fire round, but should Gendern, like in the German concept of gender, the Sterninnen, should that be banned? I mean, it can't be that that's a more significant issue to deal with in this event than education.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing. The last thing I'll sort of mention before we move on from the politics topic is, like, there's a Süddeutsche Zeitung article that came up. And of course, like all good pieces of information in Germany, it's behind a paywall. But it was all the information, like, it's so irritating. Just give this information to people and actually let them access it. And it basically breaks down all the whether you'll be financially better off with whichever party. Who do you think is going to be most financially better off with parties like the CDU, CSU, FDP and AfD? Who do you think is going to come out on top?
For the nation or for the individual?
Just which wealth bracket do you think comes out gangbusters?
It's not the working class, that's for sure.
Nope. So the CDU, CSU have been talking up their kind of financial ideas. And if they implement their plans, the two income groups with gross earnings between 55,000 and 100,000 euros can expect a disposable income to rise by a respectable 2%. That's quite nice. 2%. It's not bad. That is a lot of money in your pocket. And I think everyone could appreciate sort of a 1,500 euros extra a year. That doesn't hurt anybody. But if you earn 150,000 euros or more, this is according to a data study done by partners of Süddeutsche Zeitung, you can expect a financial increase of 5%. And it kind of runs like that. So, like, you're just massively better off. FDP, you're basically your lowest earners, sort of 2.1% worse off, whereas you're second to wealthiest, 9.8% better off, wealthiest, 8.1% better off, which kind of equates to the wealthiest will be 21,000 euros better off, the second wealthiest, 11,000 euros. And the poorest in society will be 289 euros worse off. And it's kind of the focus is middle class and upper echelons. AfD, again, populist party of the disaffected and the abandoned and the politically homeless, will, of course, give the highest earners in society 7.7% more per year, which equates to 20,000 euros. And the poorest in society will get, a healthy 2,000. No, sorry, 200.
The poorest society get good vibes. And that's what the AfD are peddling. I mean, I've seen people calling them Armut for Deutschland because their policies are not very well budgeted. And yeah, would end up financially in a much worse place as individuals and as a nation. But just economically, never mind the other shower of moral feces that comes with them.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, but the article itself is so matter. This is the great thing about German media, is so matter of fact. Basically, it's like, the SPD and the Greens and Die Linke and Bundesrat Wagenknecht have kind of come to the conclusion that the wealthiest in society should pay more tax. I'm like, Is that new?
It's revolutionary.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh, what a wild concept. But again, something that wasn't particularly discussed in depth in the debate, sadly. But yeah, we go on, don't we? Well, how long till the election? What, 2 weeks?
Yeah. Deep breath. We push forward.
So as we're heading into February, one of the exciting things that's kind of come out of the gloom of winter is the arrival of basically every possible conception of Krapfen or Berliner or watch out Germans, I'm going to say it, donuts that you can buy in all the different bakeries, certainly around my way, and I'm sure across the entire country. Obviously, been fashing in Köln near producer Simon since November the 11th, but we're only just getting in the fashion vibe, which essentially means seeing random people dressed in funny costumes and obviously lots and lots of Krapfen. And that weird kind of ticker tape stuff that seems to scatter everywhere and just seems to be over every surface of every building that I seem to enter at the university. So yeah, I went and bought some Krapfen on Saturday because I just was too tempted. And I went for a nice combination. I went for 5 donuts. This was my choice. I went for a Bienenstock donut. I went for the old plain jam marmalade donut. I had I caved to the pressures of the algorithm and got a Dubai Krapfen. And yeah, I did indeed get a Dubai.
Didn't know that.
I know.
Are you, comments now.
Are you as disgusted as I am? And I got a nice jam donut, but it had like icing on the top and a heart for my daughter. And the last one I got was a curious one. It was a mango flavored donut, but I had to buy it because it had a big sign that said mango on it. And yeah, that was my donut selection. What did you make of it? I sent you a photo on Saturday. You seemed fairly impressed.
No, I think you know my true reaction was I was annoyed because mango isn't a donut flavor.
It is, man. It tastes like mangoes. It was delicious.
No, all I could think at the time was that you had completely abandoned your working class roots and that you had entered into this like nouveau riche, avant-garde, close to Munich neighborhood living posh git. And I was genuinely disappointed in you. Like, ancestors are rolling in their graves and Nick has a fucking mango donut.
I didn't know I was a class traitor for having a mango donut.
You absolutely are. And now I know about the Dubai donut. It's even worse.
Come on. Like, I mean, you got to try it.
You don't have to try it.
It just tasted, one of them tasted like mango and it was quite nice. And the other one tasted like pistachio and chocolate and it was quite nice. They were just Krapfen. I feel like, yeah, you're reading too much into my Krapfen choices. I did get one that was made out of sandpaper and newspaper clippings. So like just to keep up my working class roots.
That's fine.
It was made of coal.
filled with beef gristle. These are the things that we should be doing.
I appreciate it, Simon. It was very decadent.
Simon, during your absence from the pod, I think I revealed that I once took an employment contract in the Philippines, more or less based on my fondness for mango. So I'm frantically looking for the unlike Simon Maddox button, but I can't seem to find one.
Like, no, don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-mango. I'm anti-mango
well
and donuts.
Like you were.
Yeah, no, it's in donuts. It is a pretentious filling of the highest order.
It is. As a fruit, I don't doubt it. It is.
As a fruit, fantastic. Mm. I saw a video yesterday on Reddit of, I don't know if it's real or not, I hope it is, of a community in Thailand that have started growing seedless or stoneless mangoes.
Oh, really?
And these are like 25 centimeter long. They're monster mangoes with no stone. And people just like scooping out beautiful spherical mango pieces. It looked incredible. So I'm not anti-mango. I'm just anti-mango in a donut.
I've got a question. How many donuts do you reckon you get out of one of them mangoes?
Out of those, it would be a good 20. These are monster mangoes, I swear.
Delicious. You say, right? You say, okay, fairness. It is incredibly pretentious to eat a mango Krapfen. I agree. But I wish for science. But there is, I think, in fairness, and you have discovered it, a worse option I could have got as a...
See, I don't think this is worse. Donut Club. I think the mango really? Is worse.
Oh my God, geez, I didn't realize how far I'd fallen. But anyway, tell me about the one that I think's worse and somehow you think is a little bit better than mango.
So, I mean, one of the things we often did when we were together back in the origin days of this podcast is we spent a lot of time talking about kebabs. And one of my proudest moments ever was a skit we did about me ordering a drunken kebab.
It was one of my favorite things.
It was
we
a proper
did.
Soundscape. It was a magical experience. We really nailed skits back in the day.
You could totally tell that we had so much time on us.
Yes. COVID lockdown. It was nailed on. Yeah. I downloaded an auto-tune app at one point and started doing songs for the podcast. It was a very, very unemployed period of my life. But yeah, there is a renegade maker that has decided that doner, kebab, and donut should meet one another, and they're selling them. And of course, I'm not sure. I genuinely don't know what is worse, the mango or the kebab. I kind of want to try the kebab one more than I do mango. But I think I'm just being provocative now at this point.
I try both of them. I'm not a purist. I'm an equal opportunities krapfen eater.
But if you're having a kebab donut, what sauce are you having? Chili sauce, garlic, yogurt?
Oh, chili sauce, man, all day. chili and sugar, like that works.
Bit sharp, bit of...
Yeah, always, man. Come on. There's still parts of me that are working class, just not my donut preferences.
Yeah, I think drunkenly smashing a donut kebab and then puking it would be a really good way to get back to your working class roots. Relive those glory days at university and the like. Yeah.
Hey, St. Patrick's Day is only a month away.
Yeah, don't I know it. One thing that is fantastic about this is that just by happen chance, the company that is doing this, their name is Rank, and so they have little flags that go into them that says Rank on it. And of course, any native British speaker will know the Rank is a great synonym for disgusting. So yeah, that's pretty good. Here is our disgusting kebab donut, proudly proclaiming with a flag.
Oh, that is something else. That is, honestly.
I mean, obviously the Americans have been doing this kind of stuff for a long time. And it's nice to see the Germans catching up a little bit, I guess, on that front. And I will also add that they do look reasonably healthy because there is a pretty big chunk of lettuce in them.
I noticed of my krapfen choices, that the one that you didn't complain about was the Bienenstock krapfen. And I suspect I know why producer Simon didn't, because his darling wife loves a Bienenstock krapfen, just like me. That was my choice. What's your favorite krapfen then, producer Simon?
I mean, that one's pretty good. I have to say that's pretty good because I do like the old Bienenstock, whatever. So if you stick it in a donut, no complaints. But it was quite funny. On Saturday, I went off and did the shopping and I said, do you want a treat from the bakery? And Tina said, yeah, but only if it's a Bienenstock donut. That was the only thing. She didn't want anything else. So, yeah, I didn't have one. I had a yogurt tasha, which is sort of just a pastry with yogurt and jam
yogurt,
stuff in it.
Yogurt tasha, that sounds messy.
Okay, I don't know if I should reveal this, but I tend to eat it with a knife and fork. Otherwise, it is a mess.
So what was that about me being bourgeois and avant-garde?
How is it suddenly that I am the working class one? Like, I was born in fucking Surrey.
All I did was have a mango fucking donut, Surrey. Man. Chill out. Honestly. You think I'd shot Trotsky or something? Come on. Sorry.
You work at a university. You're eating mango donuts.
I am the definition of champagne socialist. Oh, is that a bottle of Bollinger? Oh. Yeah. No, not at all. I'm a centrist dad now. I think that's where I am. One thing I'll say before we finish is we haven't touched on the terrifying debate over what the hell we actually call donuts. And apparently it's not donuts. I was advised by my 4-year-old daughter on Sunday that I said, oh, do you want one of these donuts? And she said, they're not donuts, Daddy, they're krapfen. A donut's got a hole in it. And I'm like, she's already been like waylaid by the propaganda that you can't call krapfen donuts. And I'm like, I don't know how to translate a krapfen into English if I don't use the word donut. I only have one choice. But I was speaking to a good friend of mine, and they were saying that they were in their canteen listening to a group of like over 50s blokes moaning about the fact that the naming conventions of Berliner and Krapfen and Krabler. I think Flaumendatschi? I don't know. It's got so many different.
There are names. A lot of them. You have the classic Berliner or Krapfen, I guess, debaters that is the two main parties. But then you have Berliner, Berliner Ballen, Berliner Pfannkuchen, Kreppel, Grebel, Krebel, Krebelchen. Pfannkuchen is the one that upsets my wife the most when she hears that. It's not Pfannkuchen. Krapfen, a Puffel in the area of Aachen. But that's just with apricots and marmalade. So apricot jam and a
puffle. I was thinking a really particular one. It can't be any other filling.
I'm not getting into the debate of what an Aachen puffle is.
It drills down, doesn't it?
I hesitate to say they probably don't have Dubai puffle or mango puffle in Aachen.
I don't want them then if they don't have any mango.
Next time I drive to the UK and take the Eurotunnel, I'll probably go past Aachen so I can find out.
Yeah.
I'll stop and walk in mango puffle bitter and see what happens.
What I love is there's all these different names, and yet as soon as you say donut, they all lose their minds.
Yeah.
Here we go.
It is, obviously we have similar things in the UK, like the English word for a bread roll is an equally touchy regional subject, but it is quite weird. And obviously we've talked, I didn't say it because I was worried about the clapback of is it Carnival or is it Fasching? Because in one town it's one and one town the other. And if you say, oh, how was Fasching? Oh, it was Carnival.
It's not Fasching. Fasching is a different thing. Is it though?
And one thing I've also learned in my donut related research for the show is that there is also a tradition of doing donuts with mustard or onion as the filling, as a hilarious joke. So you'll go to an event. Apparently, it's quite common for Sylvester, for New Year's in Berlin, that you'll go to a party and everyone will have a donut and some unlucky sod will get one filled with mustard and everyone will point and laugh at them and go, ha, 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 you've got a horrible donut. Happy New Year. Who says comedy is dead?
There's something really Grimm's fairy tales about that. I mean, in fairness, you have to give it up to Germany. Especially Bavaria, they're allowed to dictate what the hell we call donuts, Krapfen, or whatever the hell we're going to choose to call them, because they were invented in Nuremberg, apparently. Although we did find out there is a reference to them in the Roman kind of archives. I can't remember, is it Pliny the Elder or something like that mentioned them? But yeah, so fairness to the Bavarians, I guess we have to call them Krapfen, and that's the law now since they invented them.
But what mustard are we putting in a Bavarian Krapfen?
Oh, you know which one we're putting in, man. Come on, it's Sussex. Exactly.
No, it's got to be Weisswurst and Kreppel.
Oh, right, stop recording. Let's get quickly get this patented. We've got money just coming from the skies with this idea. That brings us to the end of the show. We're off to patent Weisswurst and Sussenf, Krapfel, Krapper, Krabble, Donuts. We're going to call them Donuts. That'll mess with them. If you're enjoying the podcast, why not give us a rating on Apple Podcast, which only takes a minute and can really help us. You can also rate us on Spotify, so chuck some stars our way there as well. The podcast has accounts on Blue Sky and on Instagram, so feel free to follow us on those social media channels and just search for Decades From Home to find us. As ever, if you have any questions, feedback, or maybe an article or topic you'd like us to cover, you can reach out on any of our social media channels or get us on decadesfromhome@gmail.com. If you have time, take a look at 40%german.com. Weekly articles are up every Saturday. All that's left to say is thanks, and be some next time. Cheers!
Cheers!
Ciao!